Good morning, church.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good.
Welcome. We're going to begin today a little series, and it's going to be we're going to be working our way in Romans chapter 12, beginning in verse 9 through the end of that chapter. Okay, so that's where we'll be, Romans 12, and we'll begin in verse 9. And we'll work through this over a series of weeks. In fact, today you'll love it. 9 and 10 is what we're going to cover. How's that sound? All right. But it begins like this. Go ahead and bring that scripture up. Yes, love must be sincere. Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. And honor one another above yourselves. Okay. Now, what I want to do is give you a suggestion, first off, as we approach this thing. The very first words there, love must be sincere. So, as you're reading through this week and through the weeks ahead as we're working through this, maybe think of that as the title for this section. In other words, love must be sincere. Now, we'll talk about that in just a second. But in other words, love must be sincere. Now, I'm the kind of guy, I've told you before, I say, now, what does that look like? Okay, Paul says, I'm going to tell you. And he just starts working through there, saying, love must be sincere. This is what sincere love looks like. And he's going to start talking, and he's going to explain that to you. So approach it that way, if you would. At least read through it one time, just looking at it, saying, love must be sincere is the overall theme, and this is how you do it. Okay? So approach it that way and look at it. So you've got the idea there that love must be sincere, and the idea there is you're not play acting. You're not wearing a mask. This would have been a word that would have been used for an actor. And in their day, you wouldn't have had the makeup that we do today, but you would have worn a mask in the Greek theater to try and demonstrate your character. And in fact, you kind of see that with drama even today, maybe a carryover. And one of the symbols for drama is the two masks. If you've seen that before, it goes back to the Greek days. You would wear a mask on stage to play a character so that the people sitting in the stands, and they could have some pretty big theaters back then, could hold thousands and thousands of people, so they would kind of be able to tell, oh, this is a good guy, that's a bad guy. And we give those same clues in our movies today, don't we? You know, we can kind of tell by the way someone's dressed, they're going to be a good guy, a bad guy, that kind of thing. You don't wear a mask, is the idea. That's the idea behind sincerity. And we can accept that. And I want to come at the idea here that it's about consistency, not perfection. We can get caught up in that perfection thing, it can drive us crazy. It's about consistency over a long period of time. How about a life? Is that a long enough period of time for you? It's all the time you got, isn't it? That's it. It takes it all right there. So it's about consistency, not perfection, over a long period of life. Now, hate what is evil. Now, hate is a hateful word, right? But it fits here. It is. It's a strong word. Hate what is evil. Okay? And cling to what is good. And again, I like the imagery here. It's very vivid. Have you ever seen a child that's scared? What do? They cling to mama. Sometimes you'll see them stand there at the leg, you know, and they'll just be holding on there, not going to let go. Because the one good thing they know in a situation that's got them scared is mama is good. Right, ladies? Right, men? Yeah. So I want you to get that. I mean, that's the image I want you to get of a child clinging to mother. Okay. So you get this image. Hey, what is evil? Cling to what is good. Now, let's apply this. Because love obviously happens in a communal, in a community setting. Okay. I guess you could be narcissistic and in love with yourself. But I think we could all agree that's not what the Bible's talking about, right? Okay. Well, it talks about it in terms of taking it on and challenging it. But when you look at it that way, there's a couple of ways you can go about this as you apply it. I can hate what is evil in you and love what is good in me. And the reality is that doesn't get us anywhere, does it? Because if I'm in love with myself, I'm not going to improve very much about myself, am I? And if I can only see the negative and the things in you that are hateful or that are bad, I'm just going to see that about you and I'm going to transfer it to you. And the next thing I know, you're a bad person. It's easy to make that transference that type of way. So that's one way. I can love, I can see what is good in me and I can see what is bad in you. Okay. Now, it doesn't really help us and nobody gets any better. Nobody gets any better. Or I can hate what is evil in me and look for the good in you. I suggest to you that's the better way. I suggest to you that's the better way. And again, I come back to a child for the imagery here. It's fun as your children are growing up and they start eating food to see what they like and don't like. In other words, when you put something in a child's mouth that they don't like, do they say, well, I need to be mature about this and I need to go ahead and chew this and swallow it and eat it for the sake of mom's feelings? That's not our experience. You spit it out. I mean, it just comes right back out. You know, in fact, isn't that what mom's wardrobe is made up of for the first few years? Food stained clothing? Yeah, it is. If it goes into a child's mouth and they don't like it, they spit it out. I mean, it's just that simple. You know, it's done. That's the idea here. If something is hateful about you, if there's something that is wrong, I mean, if hateful is too strong a word, if there's something about you that's not right, you've got to learn to hate that part of you and drive it out. Drive it out. And then the other part of that is you've got to learn to look for the good in others. That's how love and community works. The things about me that need fixing, fix them. Because I have said it and I want to say it again, the only thing you control is yourself. We want to spend our time controlling everybody else. I'm very interested in fixing you and not me. And that's not right. Fix the thing that can be fixed. That's the only thing you have control over is yourself. And look for the good in others. Let me illustrate this. Lady told a story. She was and I'm sorry, I don't remember her name, but she worked as an anchor at a local TV station. Not an anchor, she was on air, but I think it was more special reporting type thing. And I don't remember what it was she did, but she made the manager angry. Whatever little section she did, he didn't like, or something didn't go well, it made her angry. He brought her into the office and just chewed her up one side and down the other. You ever been there? And she was upset and aggravated and angry, and he was angry. And she says, wait a minute. Before I leave this office, I need you to say one good thing about me. Because you hired me, and I don't want you to look like a fool. Right? Yeah. Can you say one good thing about me before I leave? Because you hired me, so you must have seen something good, right? Isn't that the implication of what she's saying? Can we go back to that for a moment and grab onto that before I walk out of here? Seeing the good. Now, if you want a more biblical example of that, and if you want some biblical type advice, I want to refer you back. We've talked about it before, to Philippians chapter 4. If you go back to Philippians chapter 4, and I invite you to look at it there so you can take in the whole context. If you're in there in 4, as soon as you hit verse 2, what does Paul say? I plead with Euodia and I plead with Syntyche to agree with each other. Point being, you got a couple of ladies in church that aren't getting along. And Paul calls the community of the church together and says, you ladies need to work it out and you church need to help them. Okay? Now here's the deal. What I'm asking you to do for a moment is just consider that maybe verses 2 through 9 all go together and are all addressing the same topic. Okay? Just give me that for a moment and assume it. That verses 2 through 9 all go together and they're all talking about the same thing. So in other words, when you get to verse 8, what do you see? Finally, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. And what I'm saying is that very often we read that verse and we say, this is what our minds ought to dwell on. Okay? And that's legit. I mean, that's good for that. But if you keep it in the context of a fight between these two ladies, isn't Paul giving them some very powerful wisdom for how to resolve their problems? You look at what is good in the other person. You look at what is noble. You look at these other things and you see that. That's how you're going to build a relationship again. That's how you're going to learn to love each other, because if I focus on the bad, it's just going to get worse. I promise. It's just going to get worse. Sometimes with a couple, if they're having trouble and I'm talking to them, I say, you guys fell in love once, didn't you? Why can't you do it again? There was something that drew you to each other.
Why can't you find that again? Yeah.
So, that's what I want us to do here with this idea. I suggest to you that we need to look for the good in others, and we need to work on the bad that's in us. Okay? That's part of love being sincere. Love must be sincere. Now, be devoted to one another in, this is going to use the term, brotherly love. And if that's the word you're all familiar with, we'd say it today, Philadelphia. City of brotherly love. I mean, that's the word right there in the text. I don't know if it fits Philadelphia today. I'm a Cowboys fan. I guarantee if I wear a jersey up there that says Cowboys, it's probably not a lot of brotherly love is going to be shown. But just an aside. They're going to throw things at me, hurt me. But when you look at that, I want to flesh it out in this way. There is something about the family bond that is so very hard to break. This notion of familial or brotherly love. And I want to use this idea of familial love. Maybe I want to try that word. Okay, it's a little more inclusive perhaps. I remember one time teaching some teenagers, and we were on Joseph and how Joseph was sold by his brothers into slavery. And, you know, made the point what a terrible thing that is. One little girl said, I could do it. If she had a little brother, she might be just fine selling into slavery. Okay. I said, you don't really mean that. She said, oh, yes, I do. Okay. Well, I didn't pursue it any further that way. Why? The truth is, if her brother had died that week, don't you think she'd have been devastated? She can say everything she wants in Bible class, and she can beat him up at home, and she can do all kinds of things to him. But I promise you, if somebody in school had threatened her little brother, she'd have been on him in a heartbeat. You get this idea of familial love? I can do it to you because you're my family, but nobody else can do that to you. I mean, that's one way we might express it in a worldly sense. Yeah, you get that notion there. And that's probably what this word is trying to encompass. This notion of we're family. We're committed. We've got to figure out how to love each other. It's not a choice in it. We're family. We're going to have to see each other at Thanksgiving. Do we want it to be miserable or do we want it to be joyous? Make a decision because you probably have the power to do either one. Because if you're family, don't you know how to make somebody mad in a hurry? Yeah. We know the history, don't we? It is no problem in my family to make somebody mad if I want to. I can do it. It's easy. Yeah. So you make some choices there. There's a TV show I like that shall remain nameless. In fact, Kelly asked me, she says, why do you like this show? Because I don't really watch that much TV shows, but it's one that's on, and I try to catch it as I can. And I said, you know, because she points out all the bad things. I said, you're right about all of that. I said, you know the thing I love about this show? It's a bunch of people that shouldn't be together who stick it out. That's what I like. I like it because it's a bunch of people who make each other mad, who irritate each other, who get in each other's ways, who cause problems for each other. And through it all, there's one thing that's constant. They stay friends. That's what I like about this show. You know, and she says, well, okay. Don't ever tell anybody you like it, you know. I like those type of movies. I like those type of situations where people say, you know what? We're family. We're going to have to make it work. Now, I want to start getting into this a little bit because you start to see what Jesus does and what it says, how very revolutionary it is. Who does Jesus say are my brothers and sisters? Those that do the will of the Father. It is not about blood. It's about water. In fact, I was aggravated because I was running some of my sermon ideas past another preacher to see what he thought. And he told me, he says, yeah, I think you're on the right track. In fact, he told me, he says, there's a preacher I know, preached a sermon one time called Water is Thicker Than Blood. And I was so aggravated because that's what I was going to say this morning. Somebody else already thought of it. Once in my life, I want an original thought. But be that as it may, the point here is, in other words, in the world out there, the idea is blood is thicker than water. In the church, water's thicker than blood. The waters of baptism bring us together into a family. And we, at that point, I just want to say another way, we're stuck with each other. Now we got to make it work. That's brotherly love.
That's familial love.
I was looking around. I found an interesting little thing from Plutarch. He would have been writing in the first century, so he's concurrent with our New Testament writers, okay? And he made this point, because to give you an idea of how the world thinks, he says he knew a man one time who lost his foot. He didn't say how, he just had lost his foot. And so in order to get around, he fashioned one out of wood that he used. I guess he can kind of walk normal that way and not, you know. And Plutarch went on to say, he says, that's what I think it would be like for somebody to like somebody that's not in the family better than somebody that's in the family. He said that would be like mangling your body and then getting a wooden foot. You see what he's getting at there? What I'm getting at is that what Jesus did and said in that world back then was revolutionary. Because when you look at Plutarch, he's saying family counts more than anything else. To put somebody else and make them more important than family is like mangling your body. It's like replacing your real foot with a wooden foot. Jesus comes along and says, it's not about that. Water is thicker than blood. Water is thicker than blood. We are stuck with each other. Love each other. Love each other. If you want another example of that, go to 2 Peter 1:7. And if you're familiar with that passage, it's where there's a list of virtues. You know, to this add this, this, that. When you come to verse 7, it says, to goodness add brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness add love. Here's the interesting thing, and I can see why the translators weren't consistent here. I get it. But they're not consistent, because this word here for brotherly kindness in 2 Peter 1:7 is the same word in Romans, the exact same word for brotherly love. In other words, you see why they didn't translate it. We need brotherly love to turn into love. Because to us, that would be just kind of a repetition. I think the point that Peter is trying to make there in that text is that, you know what? When we come into the family of God, we're brought together and we have to learn to love each other. And we want to take it from brotherly love into the kind of love that just gives because it should and because it wants to. We move from that I've got to I want to. So that's why in 2 Peter there you see this thing about, he doesn't say, now, I need you to add to brotherly love, move that to love. You see the distinction there in the movement that goes along. So I want us to get that idea that we have got to figure out how to love each other. We have to. And that's not a problem. Y'all are a lovable bunch. Okay? Honor one another above yourself. No one is more important than anyone else. Heard a man tell a story one time about the church he grew up in. And everybody knew that when you came through the third grade Bible class, that whoever the teacher was, Nancy was going to be in that class. Nancy would keep the class straight, and Nancy handed out the pencils. And when class is over, Nancy collected the pencils and sharpened them. And that was what Nancy did. Now, as a kid, you don't think much about it. As you become an adult and you look back, you realize Nancy had some challenges in life. I don't know what the politically correct word is. Just, you know, couldn't function at a high enough level that the rest of us would. What's the right word? I don't know. You get what I'm saying? Disabled. Probably some mental disability. Well, she died in her 60s. But for over 40 years, Nancy was a staple in the third grade class at that church. And when Nancy died, hundreds of kids that were now adults gathered at her funeral and talked about what a blessing it was to know Nancy. Honor one another above yourselves. No one is more important than anyone else in God's house. Don't ever think otherwise. All right, we getting it? Love must be sincere. We got some more to unpack out of this. We got some verses to go, church. But it's going to be good. Amen. All right. We'll stop now. I'll extend our time of invitation. I don't know what's on your hearts and minds this morning. But the opportunity is here. We're going to sing a song in just a moment. If there's something we need to pray about, Let's pray about it. If there's something we need to talk about, let's talk about it. Hey, if you're ready to become a part of that family that loves each other no matter what, why not? If you're ready to be baptized this morning, let's do it. I'll be waiting at the back. Well, that'll be there with me. Let's stand and sing.